Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lean Toss-Up Call of Duty League podcast. This is the Major 3 preview. I'm here, as always, with my co-host and a special guest today. First of all, to my co-host, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Yeah, Major 3 qualifiers flew by, I would say. Yeah, I am excited to talk about Major 3. It's not every day we get to talk about a major. Excited about that. I know you are in the Toronto area. I'm not sure if you're going to the major or not, but still exciting. Anytime it shows up in Toronto, it seems like it's a good one. Yeah, looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think I'll be making it this weekend though. But also to comment about the major, our guest from back from Major One, Doug Levy from Twitter. How are you doing tonight?
Doug Levy from Twitter. It's true. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited to be back. Yeah, last time I was on, it was so fun getting to talk to other people who know so much about COD. I learned so much over that even that hour that we were talking. So I'm excited to be back. I know obviously we're gonna talk about the CDL in general before we talk about the games, but I'm super excited for the games. I think this major will be very interesting. I think the league is in a very interesting spot right now with how FaZe has been playing, and I don't know. I just really enjoy watching FaZe play right now. I'm not a huge FaZe fanboy, but they are something diff they're something serious right now. And so yeah, I'm excited to hopefully watch that continue.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're a really exciting team right now. However, though, we will get into that in just a few minutes. But we've been teasing this the last couple of weeks, and we wanted to talk a bit about the future of the CDL, what we want to see. Obviously, the three of us here, we are obviously Call of Duty League fans. I've been watching it, obviously. I watched it a little bit years ago, but actually, basically since the pandemic, I've been watching it. I'm assuming we've all been fans and we produce content for it. And obviously there are some issues, and we've talked a lot about some of those issues on those podcasts, and we've been critical of the CDL at times. And the thing is, again, we're critical of something because we care about it. We want it to be better, right? We're not just like, this sucks, make it go away. Like, we're like, we want this to be better, right? And the thing is, recently with the announced change that they are removing the buy-in fees for all the teams and they're giving them a constant source of revenue, that offers potential for a different future. And the thing is, I think there's been a lot of speculation that there needs to be some changes in the CDL. And I think we are going to offer some of our changes. So I and Doug, we have proposed some changes for the CDL. We both have similar but different visions for a potential new future for the CDL. I'm going to go through mine first, and then we'll go through Doug's after that. So just a quick recap of the league format and how we've gotten to where we are right now. So the CDL was originally constructed to be similar to the NFL NBA team. So the originally, like way back before, even before the pandemic, this was originally constructed as there was a bunch of quote unquote, I'm not sure if they're called home series or not, but basically it was events at each team's location. Different teams would play different games, and they'd play once a week or so. I think maybe some weeks they'd play two games. I can't remember exactly how it was constructed, because it changed really quickly after. But it was originally meant to be there's basically an entire regular season, and then the top teams play in champs, and then champs is obviously the single elimination tournament. Now, there was backlash from that, and that then became, okay, now we're just going to basically make these individual home series, and each home series is going to be some teams playing, and they're going to compete for a home series victory, and then that will count for points, and then points will continue on through champs. And then obviously they did away with points because of the pandemic, and then that's how we got with that series. But then that evolved to the next year. So it eventually expanded to there was these majors, originally five majors, now down to four this year. Basically, with games played for a couple of weekends, usually about 3 weekends, now up to five for this year. But basically, there would be these qualifying matches. Those matches would serve as seeding for those five majors. Sometimes it would be a pro-am or whatever. But that's basically what we've had since Black Ops Cold War, since the second year of the Call of Duty League. The problem with the current format is these qualifying matches. I think everybody here, I think, basically agrees with that. But the problem is, what is the problem with them? The problem is they drag on for too long. Basically, at this point, 3 weeks was, I think, about perfect. By the third week, you started losing a little bit of interest in them. But now we're at the point where we're into week five. It's just, okay, come on. And especially, we're at a point now where some of these weeks, there's two games on Friday, three on Saturday, three on Sunday. That used to be 3-4-3. You really feel that loss of that extra game in those weekends. And the majors are now too infrequent, right? There used to be five. That was already pretty infrequent. You'd be basically stretching out five majors in a format from basically February through to August. That is not 5 months. So basically you basically had to do some weird kind of tricks there with the calendar. Now we're at down to four. that's even worse, and you can really see it when that's why they expanded out the 5 weeks there. So I have my proposal for the new league format. It's similar to the current format in some ways, but also very different. So the thing is, I feel like the root of some of the problems of the Call of Duty League, but also the source of a lot of hope for this in the future. I think the Call of Duty League originally thought of themselves as the NFL / NBA. They thought this was going to be like, and I think they viewed themselves, and in many ways they actually targeted a lot of NFL owners. There's a lot of NFL owners in the owner pool. I think they view themselves as these major sports leagues, but they haven't done the groundwork of this. I think they're just assuming we're the NFL, we're going to act like the NFL or the NBA. They don't realize that those leagues have existed for 100 years. They didn't always look this way. If you go back 100 years, teams played less games. I think the way they've gotten to it now is that there was a point when basically they needed more in-gate revenue. They needed more games in a season to literally have people physically come to games to get enough revenue to keep themselves going by. This is before you saw massive TV revenue contracts. Things have changed now, but basically originally when you look back at MLB, they've expanded the season to 162 games, NHL as well, NBA. Those seasons used to be smaller. They've had to expand that out just to get physically more revenue from ticket sales. And this is what I think the issue with the Call of Duty League is, the fact that you view yourselves as the sports leagues, but those sports leagues deliberately made more games so there'd be more content and more chances for people to physically come to games to see them. So what you need to do is you need to follow in the footsteps of those leagues before you. You need more games equals more quote-unquote TV revenue. It's not TV revenue, but whatever, more money, right? You need to follow in the footsteps of those previous leagues. So the qualifying matches before each major remain, but each team plays each other once in the 2 to 3 week span. So the thing is, you have to do away with the whole, like, oh, it was originally 5 matches, now it's 7. The problem is, it's extremely unfair to certain teams, because there's no real way to figure out who is a good team or who is a bad team. There's no way to make the schedules equal, because sometimes you're going to be playing teams that are better, sometimes you're playing teams that are worse. The seven games qualifying fixes it a little bit, but to fully fix it, each team needs to play a full 11 games. And you need to get to a point where there's more meaningful COD, right? You can't just have a month and a bit of qualifying matches. There needs to be, like, elimination. There needs to be tournaments. There needs to be brackets here. So you need to get that down to one major per month, maybe a break in the middle of the season, maybe a couple breaks in there. But basically, you need to get down to one major per month for the entirety of the season. And those need to be hosted by a CDL team. You need to have basically at least half of the league, if not more, hosting a major. And that's how you have to build the game. You have to take a page from the original sports leagues of basically, we need physical people in physical seats spending money on things for us to generate revenue. You need to get back to that. And that's my proposal for that. So I'll pass it off to Doug. What are your thoughts on the first part of my proposal here?
Yeah, this is definitely the thing I agree with the most. I think you didn't make this claim, but I see this claim being made a lot on Twitter, which is that, like, online equals bad, where I think what they mean is the qualifiers equal bad. Online COD, in my opinion, is not that uninteresting on its own. Every single Challengers event I ever watch, except maybe one day every 3 months, is online, and that can be exciting because of the format. And also, just, yeah, I think the biggest problem right now with qualifying is the low stakes nature of it. Like, yeah, with very few games, it's very unlikely that the team with the most CDL points in a qualifier is the best team, and so the games themselves mean very little to the fans, and they mean even less to the teams themselves, especially with the way they changed the formatting this year to give even more points to the teams on LAN. I think the league is acknowledging that the LAN of results are more indicative of actual talent than the online. I think all of that, yeah, is, I think that's the problem. So I think my big takeaway is, people who say online equals bad need to realize it's qualifiers equal bad, and we need to do something about that. So I appreciate your suggestion then to say, okay, here's how we can make the qualifiers better. I 100% agree that these 2 games set Fridays need to go. That is, like, I am a diehard fan, and I was actually frustrated last week, I think it was last week, when LEG was done before I got off work, and I live in Central Time, and they're the second game, and they're done, and there are no more games. That's just criminal. Like, these games are over before people are getting off their lunch break on the West Coast. It's just, I don't know, that in and of itself could go. We could have more games on Fridays and Saturday, or on Saturdays and Sundays, and get rid of that, and I'd be happy. But I think to one point that I would maybe push a little on is, you mentioned, like, these teams acting like they were professional sports, or like NBA teams or NFL teams, and they're not. They need to be getting revenue from like events that they're hosting. I will say, like, the original formation of the CDL was based around the in-person event. There was no online in the original CDL. It was like, yeah, what was it? Every team hosted two events in person in the first year, which we shut down like halfway through. Or I think everyone hosted one, then some people hosted two maybe. But we were traveling. Yeah, like year one, I was with LEG. We were traveling like every other week to go to these events to play in person. And those teams could charge to put butts in seats at those games. So I would say we should put some of the blame on COVID for removing the ability for the teams to do that. I will say it's taken far too long for the league to acknowledge the fact that, not regardless of how you feel about COVID being over, but that like in-person events are viable again. And yeah, they've basically just held on to the crutch that is the online Call of Duty League past when it's been valuable to them. And so to your point about like, every team needs to host an event, even if it's online, I'd push back a little on that and say, they're not making any money if these events are online. The teams aren't. Like and it's not generating fandom either. I don't care if New York is the host of this next weekend's online tournament, because they don't add anything different than any other team. It's just a title they get to stamp on the thing. If it's in New York in the Big Apple, now you're making fans out of these attendees. But if it's the home series sponsored by New York Subliners with Miles and Chance and Merc and Maven with Puckett and Alley Cat on the desk, like, who cares? Like, it's exactly the same thing. So yeah, like I it actually leads into what I was gonna, I'll say later, but yeah, like there needs to be some differentiation here. These teams need to make money somehow. If it's not, if the league's not gonna let them have 10, 12 events on LAN every year for them to host, like they need to figure something else out, because these online things aren't doing it. But yeah, all of that is to say, I agree with most of this, and I do agree that, yeah, let's just focus on the qualifiers and fixing them. Nobody cares when we're playing, yeah, a bunch of meaningless COD for 80% of the year.
Mm-hmm. CDL metrics, what are your thoughts on what we've discussed here initially?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you on every front here as well. The one thing that I'm reminded of when just talking about, yeah, online qualifiers that are hosted by a team, like the year 2020 comes to mind, and just how eerie it felt when they would be like, hey, welcome back to the Paris home series. Here's some drone footage of what Paris looks like on a sunny day. We're not actually there, but we could have been if COVID didn't happen. And then the next weekend, it's, hey, welcome to the Florida home series. This is what Florida looks like from a drone. Like, it was just odd. So I do agree on that front that if you have online qualifier mini majors or something like a home series like they used to have, yeah, not necessarily needing a sponsor for those. I don't know exactly what the best solution is. I'm okay with online COD. Like, I watch online COD. I watch a LAN match. To me, as someone who watches basically every match from my computer, like, they look the same. I know they're not, technically. There's a roar of the crowd in one that isn't existent in another one. And I understand that playing the game is different when you're on LAN versus when there's ping involved or anything like that. But as a fan, it's COD. It's competitive COD. I don't really care. Just throw it up and I'll watch it. Or don't throw it up. That's a little gross. But anyway, I firmly agree with pretty much everything here. The one other note before I pass it along to Robert again, comparing them to MLB teams, NBA teams, that sort of thing, and how those leagues came into existence, I think one key thing to remember, and it's an obvious one, is that those leagues, like, travel is like a huge factor in those leagues. Team from this city needs to play team from this city. They gotta move one physically throughout the world. Whereas in COD, if we're willing to play online matches, which we have been for 5 years now, awesome. We can just keep throwing matches on the stream as much as we want, basically. Yeah, that's really the thing here with this, is like, why aren't we playing more? And I know a lot of it has to do with the talent. You need to hire more talent, in theory, more observers, if you're going to have multiple matches on at once or longer days with more matches. But like, Activision has the money. Like, we know they could put the resources into that. It's just a matter of, are they willing to? But yeah, feel free to keep going on your points here, Robert, because they're all good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to clarify, the qualifying online, that would, yeah, I remember that now from COVID as well. That was very weird. That was deeply weird. But it was so weird. And it's so weird, like, when you, there's literally no differentiation between anything, right? Everything is exactly the same, right? Like, you would have, they're all just in front of some sort of green screen thing. They weren't even in it. They didn't even have a studio back then. They were all at home because they had to be. And that was what, at least now with the majors, they're physically there at a place, but then it was literally nothing. No, I think, yeah, the hosting of the, having a team hosting the online qualifiers, that doesn't make sense. No, I'm saying that each team should basically be hosting their own major. You need at least half the league to host its own major, probably closer to 8 or so over that season-long span. Okay, the second issue here is scheduling. So one game at a time gets tedious. Some teams are bigger draws than others. So this is the thing, right? We talk about this. Sometimes you have games when it's like, there's games when it's, okay, here's like the 11th and the 12th team playing each other. Then you have like the 1 and 2 game playing each other. And that could happen. Those could be right beside each other, or they could be on opposite ends of the weekend. And as I said before, not always competitive game on each day. And this is a problem of the fixed schedules. Originally, when they did back in Black Ops Cold War, the winners picked the teams that were going to be in their own group. That was, or I think they either picked those teams in their group or they picked the teams in the other group. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was actually a sense of balance there, because they basically say, okay, I don't want the best team. I want the next best team in the other group. And then the other team wants. So there was actually a way you could, there was actually some semblance of competitive balance. But the second you took that away, now all of a sudden, and you went through with this fixed schedule, which I think has had questionable results. I question exactly why that was done, but whatever, it was done. But the problem is now it's physically impossible, because okay, obviously we could say FaZe has been one of the best teams in the entire history of the league, as has Ultra. You could say, okay, they're probably a good team, but you can't 100% say they're going to be a good team. And also, you can't definitively say that, say, as LAG or Seattle is going to be bad on any given week, right? So there's no way to competitively balance your schedules. So one game per week for multiple weeks for each team has become really boring, right? We're at a point now where when you're playing 7 matches in 5 weeks, 3 of those weeks you're playing, or not, yeah, no, three of those 5 weeks, you're only playing one game. That's extremely brutal for a fan, right? There's a lot of games, times I'm like, oh, I want to watch Ultra, but there's one game, and I might be busy during that time, so I don't get to see Ultra that week. Okay, I know they're going to be okay long-term, but I'd love to watch my team there. The other issue here is that, okay, this doesn't really affect, and like, I'm an Ultra fan, obviously, so this doesn't really particularly affect me, because my team's good, not going to have a lot of team changes on my team. But if you're LAG, if you're Seattle, you need to evaluate this team, right? You need to figure out if this team is going to work long-term, right? This is a major issue here, because you have a lot of times when, if you're trying out, like, for example, Vegas Legion, right? They made a team change. They put in Ojani. They played one game. They beat Boston. Cool. That was it. They took Boston to, a map 5? They beat Boston map 5 last week, right? Great. Is that their team for the rest of the year? I don't know. They're going to have to make that choice really quickly, because they're in the major this week, so I'm assuming they're not going to make a team change. Okay, I believe they're in the loser's bracket. I'm fairly 99% sure. Okay, what happens if you go 0-1 out? Was Ojani the right fit? I don't know. Are you going to keep with him for the first few qualifying matches? Probably. What if you have one game in the first week? Oh, one game. This is the thing. If you're trying to make, because the whole point is, when you're eliminating teams to get to champs, the teams need to figure out if their team is actually a solid team or not before champs, or they need to figure out if this is a good team to last the rest of the year. If not, you're really hurting teams' ability to remain competitive here, because there's just not enough time to evaluate these players in a competitive environment. Basically, as I said before, each team plays each other before the major in a smaller window, 2 to 3 weeks. And then here's a bunch of reforms that would be more, I believe, more pro-fan here. So you need to take some pages from the NFL here. The NFL has been extremely successful with Thursday night football. When the NFL stakes out time, they basically own that time slot. There is nothing that competes with them, nothing that even wants to compete with them, because they know they're not getting as much viewership as the NFL. Now, obviously, that's not the case here, but you need to start ingraining deeper viewer habits. So, for example, okay, people are aware that there's a game on at Saturday at 3 o'clock, or a game on at Friday at 3 o'clock. Okay, But you're not always guaranteed it's going to be a good game or that your team is playing. And okay, yeah, you have the fixed schedule thing, so you know if your team is playing. But I'm like, it doesn't matter to me if February, if I find out that my team's playing June 5th, like that doesn't really matter. What you need to do is you need to create something called, or I'd propose a Thursday or a Friday night COD, whichever day they prefer. They seem to like Fridays, but the NFL likes Thursday night for a reason. So you have one night a week where every team plays. So basically every single team plays one game on one night. That's it. So basically there'd be six games that one day. That's it. This is similar to obviously basically a mix of an NFL Sunday and basically a Thursday night football, where basically, because the thing is, you can't just have one game on Thursday night because it doesn't make sense. But with this, there's enough content. Basically, all Call of Duty League fans will be like, oh, gotta watch my team on Friday night or Thursday night. Also, another page from the NFL with NFL Red Zone. So as people know, NFL Red Zone is the wraparound coverage. They're constantly showing highlights from all the different games. This is an issue with the Call of Duty League, right? With one game on at a time, if it's an uninteresting game, if you're looking at 12 versus 11 or 10 versus 9 or whatever, sometimes those games can be very boring. Also, there can be delays, as we've known before, if there's a match reset or whatever. There can be long breaks where literally nothing is happening. And this is another reason why people are like, I don't want to watch this game. I'll just wait a couple hours to watch Optic. I'm not going to tune in right now. If you have it so there's multiple games on, viewers can always say, oh, okay, I'll watch this game and not this game. And this actually rewards teams that are performing higher, that are actually evaluating players, that are actually becoming more competitive, and basically disincentivizes teams to not do that. Because if a team is good and competitive, people will want to watch them. And if you're 11th versus 12th, they're not going to want to watch that. Because right now, basically, if you want to watch Call of Duty, that's the only thing on. You have to watch 11 versus 12, even if you would rather watch a different game. What I propose is you basically have, you would have a similar format to now, except that you would basically have at least two games on at each time, and then you would have basically NFL Red Zone stream that would basically go between both games. There's always at least some sort of constant game on at any given time. Also, and this is similar to other leagues such as the League of Legends, I'd create a lower challengers league and have them play on the non-CDL days. So when you look at the way League of Legends is structured, their games are actually it's a similar structure to Call of Duty in many ways. So some of those games tend to be on weekends, but they usually have their non-elite leagues, their non-top leagues, played during the weekdays. And it's actually a nice little filler. So if you want to watch more Call of Duty, here you go, right here. You could see some other non-competitive players play Call of Duty. Or you could just not watch this and wait for the other. So it basically creates an idea where you can still watch Call of Duty if you want. It just builds up that fan base extra. And this is the thing, right? You have Challengers Elite, but you have three Challengers Elite per year. If you want to watch Challengers, if you want to watch a lower tier of Call of Duty, it is extremely inaccessible for you. It is extremely difficult to watch that. If you wanted to have a format where this drags on for weeks and weeks, that's when you do it. If you want people who are like, okay, you know what, it's a Wednesday night, I just want to watch Call of Duty, here you go, here's Challengers, there's three games on tonight, have at it, right? You don't need to have a high production value, it's just here you go, you can watch some Call of Duty, right? This is what you need to get to. This is how you build an ecosystem and how you build up viewership, is that if people want to watch COD, they don't have to wait until Friday and then maybe it's a good game or not, or maybe it's only two games or not, right? It's this proposed scheduling is more building out the ecosystem as to a kind of a more full package as compared to where it currently sits. And I'll go to Doug for comment on that.
Yeah, no, I think this makes a lot of sense. I think I'm personally a big fan of more than one game on at the same time. I mentioned before the show, but I think when we think about any of these changes, I think we need to think of it in terms of how do the four big players in here benefit, which is Activision themselves, the teams that are in the franchise league, the players, and then the fans. And I think they playing more games at once benefits, I think it is interesting to the fans, but it also allows the CDL and Activision to downsize the amount that they're having to put out for every game from like a broadcast cost perspective. And I think that is something that Activision could be potentially interested in. I think we've seen them cutting budget to observe, like we saw them cut the observers this year. They're going to more of a contract-based system. The reality is, I started to break the numbers down of how often, like how many days that we have working, like a broadcast, someone on the broadcast team would have to be working in any 6 or 8 week span or like a major cycle. It's like most of the days. And so it's, I think things like this could go a long way to help alleviate some of those cost problems for the league. And I think it seems like something that they're interested in doing. So I think this is a logical conclusion of that is, okay, if we're going to try to condense CDL schedule a little bit to make more games go on at once, yeah, why not have a red zone? Why not have low budget challengers coverage on more of the days during the week? I think those things, like, yeah, they make a lot of sense to me. I also really like your point, and I hadn't really thought about this, that just like when there are games at once, I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that certain games will be bigger draws than others, but I like your point about it being an incentive to the teams to do better and to draw more fans in. I think, speaking of the four big players here and the teams being one of them, one of the moves that Activision did here is to increase the revenue split on in-game purchases for teams so that teams can make more money off of their own in-game items. I like the move because it shows that Activision is going to let the teams decide for themselves if they're going to be successful, or at least a little bit more than they were already. And so this is another good way to do that. Let the teams have destiny in their own hands, because I know at points in the last few years, if you were a team, it didn't feel like you had your own destiny in your own hands at any point. And I think we've seen people be very critical of that are in those positions, maybe like Optic Hex. But yeah, I think this is a point to that I think would be really helpful. Ryan, additional thoughts?
Yeah, I think multiple games on at one time is almost like a must, in my opinion. Like, I will sit down and watch one game at a time, and it's fine, but there's commercial breaks baked in, and if it's a bad matchup, like if it's a lopsided matchup, or like you said, Robert, if it's Team 11 versus Team 12, and I really don't care. If it's Boston versus Vegas, and winner is still destined for lower bracket, like, I don't care. I'd rather flip on anything else at that point. So having, yeah, I think two at least, if not three, I think three might be a really nice number. I also think, like, staggering the start times, if they do decide to do that, would make some sense. Just because if you have two or three matches that all start at the same time, you're going to hit those commercial breaks in sync. So I think even just delaying one by 10 minutes or 15 minutes could be good, because we could hit a commercial break and, oh, map one of this other series is just about to start. Let's flip over to that instead. So that I really like. Just thinking back on, I think it was Major 1 last season. It was the Pro-Am Major where they had multiple streams on at once. Like, that was great. And I know that was on Twitch and maybe YouTube as well. I can't remember for sure, YouTube. But that was cool. Okay, yeah, that was cool. Like, I could literally make my own Red Zone channel with whatever I wanted to watch. And then going down to your last bullet point, that also ties into it. I think having some sort of, like, challengers... Yeah, having some sort of challengers, like, qualification into the bigger league, I think makes some sense. Where, and I know we'll maybe talk about that more later, but, like, being able to see challengers teams go up against those pro teams is really interesting, in my opinion. And if they can round out a bracket by adding more challengers teams, that's cool. And it makes it more likely that I will watch challengers if they are, you know, say, let's say Monday and Tuesday matches, because I want to see who Rocker are going to play next weekend or whoever it would be. Yeah, I think all good points there. And I think my biggest takeaway is that we just need more on at once. And we don't necessarily need the season, like, dragging on like it is now. Let's hammer out, yeah, six matches a day because we can, or whatever. So I'm cool if they do a Thursday night, Friday night themed thing. That's cool too. But yeah, I think just let's condense these games. Let's have multiple on at once. And even if some matches don't have casters, like, if they don't want to have to hire a bunch, like, that's okay. Like, I'll watch a game without casters. Like, it's not as good, but if I can just flip on anything else, assuming that the caster's stream is not good, then I'll do that. Yeah, all good points here as well, I say.
One of the reasons I suggested only two was because I think when you go back to those Pro-Am ones, I think there was only one match with casters at a time, I think. Or was there two matches, two ones with casters? I can't remember. But I think a lot of them didn't have casters. So that's a little sad. So I'd rather have, because again, these are theoretically pro league teams. There should be casters for a team that is elite level, right? I think that they tried to do that too. I believe that at most games that involved, it was basically if it was two pro league teams, there was a caster involved, with, if I remember back to those pro-ams. Yeah, I think that was one of the parts on that. Also, for Doug, I do have one quick question for you here, because you might have unique insight into this, because you were obviously working with a team before, about the player evaluation. With the current schedule the way that it is, how that is a challenge, right? It's really, we'll use the example of Legion because it's literally just the most current right now. What, like, how difficult is that for a team like Legion right now? Again, the scenario, right? Okay, they beat Boston. Okay, they beat them in a map 5. Okay, not great, but okay, they did that. Now they're going into the majors. If you go 0-1, what are you supposed to do now? You only have basically 2 series with this new team. How are you supposed to deal with that?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I actually made a note on my paper to bring that point up, but then I skipped it because I thought your other point was pretty good and I want to talk about it. But yeah, I think it's funny when you say that, because first let me say just like my personal opinion, which is I think like 1 game or 2 to 3 games doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot to me. I don't think there's much information in either amount of games from a purely statistical perspective. My experience has been that it takes a lot more games to determine the true talent of a team than that. Maybe not so many more, but like more than that can deliver us. But I can say that all day long, but the reality is, and when I was working with the Gorilla, like you have to make these decisions. Like Legion will almost more likely than not be in this exact position that you're talking about right now, where they go 0-1 and they have to decide what to do. If I'm them, 100% I say don't make a change. I think ASIM, that was really tough, and I think you've definitely made a step in the right direction here, regardless of if you go 0-1. But it's tough because, yeah, there is undoubtedly some higher upside roster moves that they'll be able to make after the major is over. They just have some downside too, and they don't know where they sit. And I tend to think there's not a lot they can do about it. I think one thing in my experience working with teams is teams are very recency bias oriented. Like they are, like you can go 5-2 in the qualifier and go double knockout and go out, and those teams are going to be the first teams on the line to make a roster change. And I always thought that was weird because, I don't know, it's like your classic, yeah, MLB team finishes, or yeah, like NHL, good example. Yeah, the Bruins win the President's Trophy a couple years ago and then get first rounded, and it's like, do they blow it up or do they like keep it? It's like they won 100 games, or yeah, like, it's, yeah, so they're, yeah, they score over 100 points and what do you do? But yeah, so I think it's tough. I think it's tough either way. I don't know how much adding a couple more games or like condensing the schedule helps. It certainly does. There's no doubt about that. I'm just a bit skeptical that it will make a huge difference. I guess my selfishly from the fan perspective, I don't really care because I like the chaos that ensues. But yeah, no doubt what's going to happen to Legion next week will be funny. And that will be entertaining from like a fan perspective. Whatever they decide to do will be hilarious, I'm sure. Because yeah, if they don't do anything, every fan will say, oh my God, they won 0-1. They came in last place at the major. Why aren't you making a roster move? And then if they do make a move, it's like you give Johnny 2 games and now he's out. Like, how could you possibly do it? You cannot win. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
And this is the point, right? Because it's not so much the game, the number of games itself, right? Because in our proposals, there'd be more games in less weeks, but it's like the physical amount of time, right? Because it's okay, there's this week, right? So this week, week one with Johnny, right? Now, okay, a second week. Now, I can't remember because they moved the break. I think it's a 1 week break from between the major to the next qualifiers, right? Okay, now we're a third week. Now we're a fourth week. And then you're like, okay, I hope we have 2 games that week, because if not, then we're making a decision based on 3 games with him. And then, then this is the thing, right? But then at that point, you're halfway through the qualifiers for the next major, and you're like, okay, if we don't make a change and it's the wrong decision, we're doomed, because then we're going to be in the loser's bracket for the last major before champs, and we may not make champs. Or you have to say, okay, we have to make a choice, because this is the thing. It's an impossible situation, and by having more matches in less weeks, it actually would help them, right? Because then basically you can make the choice after 2 weeks rather than say, we have to wait a month now before we make this call.
I think I would maybe push back and say I didn't really think of it until you mentioned that, but I'm much more interested in the scrim results over that time than I am the game. The game is just a tiny microcosm of what's been happening in scrims. And so ironically, by shrinking the schedule and putting things closer together, you're giving them less scrims, more, especially if there's travel time included too, more travel, more game days in which you're just warming other teams up. That was one thing I think people don't realize is, like, teams aren't scrimming on the days that other teams are playing because there just aren't enough teams to play. A lot of time you're just warming a team up, and that practice is not good for you. And so, yeah, like, for from Vegas's perspective, like, if this happened on a condensed schedule, they'd only have a few days of scrim results too. And then, yeah, like, this 1 week break, another factor at play is that, like, the team, if they're gonna make a move, they want to make it as soon as possible so they get as many scrims pre game one of their major four as possible. And so having a bigger break would actually be nice from that. So I just push back on that. Like, I would say, ironically, from the team's perspective, they'd love the schedule to be really spread out to make these decisions, because then you get way more scrims in. And yeah, I'm scrimming 8 to 12 maps a day versus on game days I'm warming up the same map twice against a team who doesn't want to be there, and then I play once against one team and that same map again for a third time. That is, yeah, not very good at indicating whether, yeah, Vegas has made a good move.
That's a fair point, actually. I hadn't thought about it. They probably would put more weight on the scrims rather than the physical game results, because the physical game results would probably be a bit more high variance because you're either playing a better team or a worse team, right? So I think there is some, and this was one of the things, right, when we were back to the old format, when there was five games, it's, oh, okay, this team went 1-4. It's okay, but they played four of the best teams in the league, right? It's like, there was a lot of that where, like, they have to make a change. No, they actually don't. They just got really unlucky with their draw. And this is another reason to basically level the playing field by having everybody play everybody else. Okay, moving on to three, miscellaneous. I think this is slightly more controversial, but these are more kind of, the longer term, I would recommend implementing a salary cap / public contract / player union. These actually all have to go together, because in California and in some other states, you are not allowed to have a salary cap without collective bargaining, which means a players union. You physically have to do this. You have to physically have to have the U word, a union, to be able to do this. Now, the thing is, the reason why you need to have a salary cap in public contracts is for the balance of the league. So right now you have FaZe. The FaZe team has basically been the same FaZe team since the inception of the league. Couple of changes, but basically the core of Simp and Abizi and Selium has basically been FaZe since the beginning of the league. The problem with that is the fact that you just have super teams. And the problem is, with no salary cap and with no public information on player salaries, they can just keep paying them as much as they want and it doesn't matter, right? FaZe could theoretically, until they retire, they could just keep paying them the same, just increase their salaries however much they want. They could just keep paying them again and again, and it doesn't matter. If you implement public salaries and a salary cap, say there's a new team in the league, say a brand new team comes up, or say Miami says, you know what, this isn't working for us, we want to blow it up, or actually Miami does want to keep, I think they do want to keep an all Spanish speaking roster, so fine, let's go with LEG. Let's say Stan Kroenke says, you know what, I'm sick and tired of losing, I'm going to go after the top free agent in the league, I want Simp to be on my team. So now, basically, because he knows what FaZe is paying Simp, he gets to say, I will pay you 1.5 times that, and then you come and you basically allow this, by doing this, it allows you to break up the super teams. Because if not, it basically forces teams to pay players what they're worth, and because of their public salary cap, and it rewards teams that are better at scouting, and it basically forces teams to pay players what they're worth. It's basically to ensure the competitive balance of the league, because at this point you just have teams that are will pay whatever they want for the top players, and you basically create four super teams, and then the rest of the league is just after that, and that with the standings right now. Also, I would recommend expanding the league to 16 teams, mostly just to fix bracket issues, because obviously you have to have the loser's bracket, and I think that's really annoying to have in a major. There really shouldn't be a loser's bracket in the major, but I guess that you want to have a loser's bracket to have some sort of a penalty for not performing well in the qualifying matches. But honestly, it's pointless. There really shouldn't be a loser's bracket in that, especially not in champs. And if you have 16 teams, everybody gets to go to champs. So basically people are not, you're not forcing teams to make important decisions, because basically teams could just be like, I'm changing my roster right before champs, and we're going to see what happens, right? Now you physically can't do that. You have to be planning these roster moves in accordance with a run to get to champs. As well, it also basically increases roster slots. So basically, right now, I feel like there are way too many kind of quote-unquote legacy players in the league. I think there are a lot of challengers players that probably could come up, but they don't really get that shot because there are a lot of just kind of players that have been in the league for whatever, for however long. And the thing is, you look at some of these players and they underperform. Generally, they get subbed out at some point in the season, but they somehow find themselves on CDL rosters the next year. And I feel like if you had more CDL roster slots, again, you would get more challengers players up, and it might help with some of the competitive balance of the league as well. And then also, I remove control as the third game mode and replace it with either capture the flag or some sort of modified uplink. Some players have been talking about this. The problem with control is it's really boring. It's people are like, oh, it's a mix of hardpoint and search. And okay, it is. But in some ways, it's like the worst of search and destroy and like the worst parts of hardpoint. It basically just plays as a really slow search. And it's just like, my problem with control is that there are good control maps, but sometimes there's not a lot of them, and that basically sometimes control rewards you for doing nothing. Sometimes the correct play in control is literally just to put your controller down and just stop. Now, they fixed it a little bit with the tick system, but still, though, sometimes if there's still some situations where you're literally, people will just camp out in a small room and just not do anything for a minute, and that should not be happening in a competitive play. Capture the Flag is a much more competitive game mode. It's a much more fast-paced game mode. There's always something happening. I think that would be a preference, or a modified uplink, which some people have talked about, to be boots on the ground. I think that would be a much more, in my opinion, a better viewership for the CDL, a better viewing product for the CDL. All right, Doug, what are your thoughts on the probably controversial players union there?
I guess one point, or clarifying point right off the bat, I'm fairly sure the CDL does have a salary cap. It's just really high relative to what any player is making right now. And so to that point, and I'm not positive that's still true, it certainly was true before there was a salary cap. Teams could circumvent the salary cap fairly easily by paying players as content creators as well as players. Players, I guess I won't say names specifically, but yeah, like players were making more money off of those contracts because it helps the teams like circumvent that rule. But there is a salary cap in some way. I would push back on your second point then, keeping that in mind, that what are the top players worth in a league that makes no money and has to give money back to the teams to convince them to stay in the league, where we make no revenue other than YouTube ad revenue at the beginning when you click on the video, and we have barely any in-person events, and 9 out of the 12 teams never get to host an event. What is the best player worth? It's like a legitimate question I ask myself a lot. Like, how much would I be willing to pay Simp? Because I will tell you for free that if Stan Kroenke wanted Simp, he could get within the salary cap limit if he wanted to pay him 1.5x what he's making now. I would say he would be insane to do that, but he could do that. Like, that is well within the bounds of what is available in the CDL right now, I think. So yeah, I guess I am curious your thoughts on what is a top player worth, because I tend to think even the top, this is just my personal opinion, the top players shouldn't be paid even what they're paid. I think they should be paid far less. I think that, as you said, the legacy players shouldn't be paid any more than a CDL entry contract, which is, I think, $56,000 this year. I think there are 10, 15 players in the league that shouldn't make more than 70K. I'd say there's probably like one that makes that little right now. But yeah, so to your Simps, like, how much are you paying? How much are you paying a player like Simp to play for Atlanta?
That is the thing, right? And I think this is a cool discussion to have, because you see a lot of conversations about NFL salary cap and like, how much should a quarterback be played? How much should a running back be paid? And I'd love to have these debates. We can have the theoretical ones, of course, but I'd love to have these debates for the CDL, but we don't have these numbers, right? We don't know. We don't know what Simp is making. I mean, I suspect maybe you do, but we're not going to say that publicly. But this is the thing. I wish we could have this debate of what's a top AR worth? What is a top SMG worth? What's a more flex player worth? But we don't get to have that debate because none of this is public information, right? And the thing is, I think you're probably, when you look at leagues like the NFL and MLB, and in the NHL that have salary caps, the MLB is a bit of a different salary cap, but specifically NBA, NHL, and the NFL that have hard salary caps, they basically have a block of salary that they actually have minimums and maximum salary. That is determined by the TV contract, right? Now, obviously, in this case, it'd be a YouTube contract or Twitch contract, but it should be a portion of the revenue per team. I think it's something like, I don't know what the exact revenue share is, but that dollar goes up accordingly. But then the thing is, then at that point, then you just should be paying out portions of that to other things. So this is where some NFL teams are like, okay, you have to dedicate like a quarter of your salary cap to your quarterback right off the bat. It's like, okay, this is why rookie contracts. So there's lots of different pieces that go along with this. And the thing is, there's so much the NFL, the salary cap is the game within the game. We don't even get to see that game because it doesn't even exist now, because you can just pay you guys whatever you want. And the problem is it incentivizes teams. Ultra got Envoy. And you know what? I was really happy about them. That's great. But at the same time, I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, then we're just paying Envoy, which is fine. But no one else is, right? We were willing to pay him whatever number he's being paid. But that diminishes the competitive balance, because Envoy could go out there and make another team competitive. And that's just not happening, because we just said we're one of the top teams in the league. We're just going to pick Envoy up and that's it, right? And the thing is, yeah, I'm happy we got Envoy. But I'm happy that another team out there is just not competitive even remotely now. I think you're probably looking at something like, I don't know the exact number of CDL salaries, but like you're probably paying someone like Simp like $300,000, $400,000 a year. Like that's probably not what they're being paid. They're probably being paid more in terms of content creation, because they're probably worth more for content creation. But like from just a strictly league standpoint, yes, technically the league is probably deeply in the red, but these players have worth. But the problem is we don't have a free market evaluation of their worth, because we don't have a salary cap or public knowledge on this stuff. That's the thing. You need the ability for Stan Kroenke to go say, I'm going to pay Simp whatever I want, and he's going to be the anchor of my team now to make that team competitive, but he can't really do that right now, because Simp will just say, I'm not going to do that because I can earn X amount with FaZe, and I can then earn X amount from winning tournaments and stuff, so your thing doesn't matter. But if now FaZe is restricted in just paying Simp more money, now all of a sudden that offer from the Stan Kroenke looks a lot more enticing.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with your point on salaries being public. I think it benefits players to have salaries be public, but yeah, it also allows like the general free market to take hold of these players' salaries a bit. I like your point about the players should be paid some fraction of what like the broadcasting what the league is taking in. The player salary should be based on that, not necessarily the net of what the league is making. I think that's an interesting point, just for the sake of keeping going, because I think we could talk about it for a while, and I think it's interesting. But to your point about the third game mode being replaced, I'm a huge fan of getting rid of Control. I think Control sucks. I personally would like to see Hardpoint be played again. That's definitely a personal take. Like, I think Hardpoint, it defines Call of Duty. A lot of people say Search and Destroy is like very vintage Call of Duty. It's vintage, but there are other games, if you want to watch Search and Destroy, you can turn on, that are broadcasting every single day of the week and have more interesting Search and Destroy than Call of Duty does. I think Hardpoint is just so Hardpoint is just so classic COD to me. Like, it's a ton of strategy, fast pace. Yeah, it takes advantage of all the movement that we have. It's the best of everything that COD has to offer. I would watch Hardpoint every day 100 times before I'd watch Control. I will say, and this is a point that I'll give credit to Bevels, the old coach of AG, he's made this point many times, and I agree with him, is that like people have, what is it, rose-tinted glasses about Capture the Flag. There has never been a mode less or more boring than Capture the Flag from a viewership perspective. You said that sometimes the right playing Control is to put your controller down. There were like legitimately halves of Capture the Flag games where the right strategy was to put your controller down on both teams. It is horrifically boring if played at the highest level. Capture the Flag is fun to play publicly, but like at the highest level, there are so many times where stalemates are the best option. And yeah, because I did a lot of analysis back then, I remember, but in World War II, Capture the Flag games on Ardennes Forest, oh my god, with both teams camped out back behind their deepest spawn point, there is nothing less interesting than that, I would say. But I don't know, I think, so Gridiron was the mode that was tried in World War II that was basically uplink but on the ground. I know there was like a ton of like bugs with it. It was just like, it didn't work. I still think that there's a potential that something like that could work. I just think Gridiron sucked, or I think it was called Gridiron. Whatever, they had, boots on the ground uplink mode that kind of sucked, but yeah, I think that could be good. I think, yeah, personally, I think Hardpoint as a third would be interesting. I know some pros have suggested, like, basically it could be Search or Hardpoint. Basically, it's a veto type thing where you veto out a mode for map three or something like that. I all of that I think is great. I think any of those are better than what we have now. I think we got to get control up out of here. Yeah, no fun. I think expansion, I'm very much against expansion in general, but I think that the reason that you provided for why for expanding makes a lot of sense. I think the format is like a huge, it's a huge boost to have additional teams. I think there are other ways that you can do it. I think you made this argument a little bit, but I think the problem with 16 teams to me is it's not that like we have a ton of talent in challengers and we don't know it. It's just that any legacy player and any challengers player are like about equal in skill, and that is not that interesting to me to bring more of them in. Like, it'd be one thing if we saw a lot of challengers players coming in and going, oh my god, like this guy's way better than Classic, or this guy's way better than Lamar, or like these players that get dropped every year and then come back, way better than Vivid. But the reality is Vivid drops down and he's one of the better challengers players, and then he comes back up, and like that is fine. It's just not that interesting to me to say, okay, but let's have four more teams of a bunch of, yeah, Vivids on them or whatever. It's just, yeah, it's fine. It's just not that interesting. But I do really like the point from the format perspective. I think including some of these teams in pro-ams to give us a 16-team format, I'm all for that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
What are your takes on this? And then we'll go to Doug's.
Yeah, I'll just make some quick points on each of these. Salary cap, like, I like salary caps. I think they work for the most part, but in almost any league they exist, there are ways to manipulate them, whether that's pushing money down the line or, yeah, like what Doug said with, like, content creation versus players and being able to delineate money different ways. Like, even if the salary cap is improved in a way, I still think there will be ways to work around those. And it would just take a lot of effort, I think, to really figure out how to structure that. But I'm not opposed to, yeah, let's see player salaries publicly. Let's make it more transparent. The fans have a good idea of why teams are or aren't paying some players. The expand CDL to 16 teams point, like I said earlier, I don't necessarily think the league should be bigger, but if you had events where you have 12 CDL teams plus 4 Challengers teams show up, or 8 CDL teams and 8 Challengers teams show up, like, I just want teams, like, in a major or in the league competing, because what we have now is, right, we have a big 4, if you will, and then everybody else. I think if you just expand outward, you're just going to have more of those everybody else orgs, and the big 4 are still going to exist, or big 3 or 5 or whatever you want to say. So yeah, that one's a little tricky as well. And then the last one, I don't mind control as the third game mode. Yeah, like, you made good points about capture the flag being not good, Doug, and I agree. Do we remember domination in 2020? Like, that, don't, we're not doing that again ever. That was awful. I think a third hard point or third search is very interesting because you could get different kinds of series. Like, you could have a series where there's 3 hard points or 3 searches or whatever. That is one I haven't thought about much. I would be interested in the ordering of the game modes, because I think that would matter a lot. Would you go, say it's 3 hard points that get played, would you go hard point, search? Because then it's, hard point matters a lot more, just knowing that there's an extra one, but the fact that it's 4 or 3 of the first 4 maps is even a bigger deal. So yeah, that could be interesting. And yeah, like, Uplink was awesome when it existed, but it can only exist in certain modes. Gridiron was weird as the boots version of that. So, I don't know. Like, I'm okay if we keep control. There are games where it's interesting, where it's, oh, you get the 3 stack or the 4 stack, and they still don't capture it because they get naded out or whatever. We still get good control games now and then. I don't know. That one I'm not as, I really don't care so much. But I'm just happy that we only have to see it once every series, and then we're done. Yeah, those are my thoughts. And let's not put out of the picture, like, maybe a new game mode will get invented that will be the best of them all. Like, there's always that.
Already, yeah. Been invented. I've been on the high horse for a long time that I think Safeguard from was it Black Ops 4, which is the payload mode from Overwatch, I think it would be so fun in COD.
Sure,
it's a bit tough because
moving
spawn points is just always going to be a hard thing. I think Overwatch solved that with their two fixed spawns. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a homer for Safeguard. I think Safeguard is so fun. I don't know if it would actually be good in COD or not, but I think Safeguard, if you haven't seen it, anyone listen, look up gameplay from it. It's a pretty fun mode. You basically just move a bot down the road as the game goes on.
Yeah, I think it needs to be changed, or at least better maps, because invasion control was not, that was, yeah. And it's still there somehow, I don't know why, but anyways, moving on. All right, so you have the floor now, Doug. How would you change the CDL?
All right, I've provided three central ideas here. I don't think these even necessarily have to be taken as the literal implementation that I've described here. I think these are more just ideas. To my first point here, I say remove qualifiers, add two majors. I will not be sad if you decide to add three majors or four. It's not the two majors that's the important part about these points. Keep that in mind as I go through these. I think, and also an important point is that these three aren't necessarily, you don't need all of them. You can take or leave any of them in any combination. They should, I think they work together very well, but I don't think they need to all be implemented at the same time, which I think is preferable for a league that's like probably going to do something slow and not just, yeah, we're not going to wake up next year and have the entire thing look completely different than it looks this year. Yeah, so first, I think this is the point that we've touched on the most already, which is just like, online COD doesn't suck. It's the qualifiers that do. I personally would like just no qualifiers. I think I'm a bit of a proponent that building a bit of anticipation is not a bad thing in Call of Duty fans. In the past, we've not seen so much organized COD altogether. Pre-CDL, organized COD every single week was not the norm. And so I'm of the mind that like if we build a little anticipation for the big matchups on LAN, that is only going to help the scene thrive more. A bit, if I see Optic versus Atlanta less often, it's only going to make it that much more hype when they do play in a major tournament finals or whatever. And so I do think that is a one way. And so the other point here that I alluded to before is that, yeah, before Champs this year, we'll have 30 different weeks where the broadcast team would have to put on some sort of show. And out of every 8 weeks, 6 of those weeks are going to have broadcast on them, and only 4 days of those 8 weeks are going to be in-person LAN Call of Duty broadcast. And if you consider the time it takes for that team to fly out and prep on Monday, Tuesday, I saw people flying out today that are on the broadcast team and stuff. It's just a huge expense for very little output from a production standpoint. I'd love to see, yeah, what we've talked about, multiple games at the same time, more production at the same time, and then bigger breaks between, because yeah, it allows us to benefit from the economies of scale a little bit better. I think that's a win for the league. It's a win for the fans who get more COD, they get more selection, more choice. And then yeah, as you said, and I hadn't really even considered when I wrote this, it gives the teams an incentive to do well, to earn their viewership. And so I think all of that could be very interesting. Now, this one does go with the first one, but I think you can do it on its own too, which is like, okay, what do we do with all that time in the middle? I think online Call of Duty in tournament style is interesting, and I think like the novel idea here would be that like let's make them run by the teams, not even just necessarily hosted, but run by the teams as well. I mentioned, is it a New York home series if it's Puckett, Alley Cat, and Nameless on the desk with Merc and Maven standing next to him in the Esports Engine studio in Columbus for the 58th week in a row? Maybe not. New York, you can hire anyone to be on your broadcast. You can let the players stream their POVs, and that be your little weekly tournament that you run instead. I think a point that I didn't bring up before that I think is interesting from like a, if we have 4 broadcasts, what do we do? I find co-streams to be very entertaining from a non-casted esport point of view. I prefer co-streams to the main channels on pretty much all esports that I watch. I just think that it's just fun to interact with someone while you're watching the game instead. So I think there's a huge opportunity for co-streams here. Imagine New York, or imagine Boston. I'm wearing my Boston shirt today. Imagine Boston has Gronk co-streaming a Boston-hosted event with, yeah, a couple people in the room with him, and I'm tuning in to watch that. That sounds awesome. And I might... A thing that wouldn't happen with a New York stamped home series where nothing's different is I might become a Boston Breach fan just from watching that, which is like something we don't really have right now. So yeah, I think it just gives the teams the freedom. And again, to the point of like, it lets the teams, they're in the driver's seat. Yeah. Boston has the ability to get Gronk and let it pay them in return, not just pay the league. It pays them if Gronk is entertaining in that co-stream or whatever. I think that's a really cool thing. But yeah, I think the lesser point, but very important, is we need tournament style online COD. That's the only thing. I don't really care that some teams might get double first rounded and that be all they play, because I don't think these things aren't as important. These aren't the LAN events. These aren't the holy grails. Like, I don't care if, yeah, a team gets knocked out early. They still get to scrim just as much. Yeah, nobody's under the illusion that we're under right now that every one of these games means so much. Like, I added another little thing here, which is that the league could support these events financially or otherwise. And yeah, you could say, okay, this helps with the seeding for the tournament. But yeah, no, like, you start in loser's bracket or you start in winner's bracket. But like, yeah, just the basic seeding, sure. Draw-ins for groups of a pro-am, sure. Make that part of the online qualifier. I think all of that could be, yeah, you mix and match that however you want. And then I think the third thing, and something we really haven't talked about much, but something that I've become more interested in, is that the viewing model, especially on YouTube, it's just not, other than this us slamming ads for Activision sponsored products down your throat, like, constantly, like, there's just not a ton of revenue coming from just the broadcast itself. And like, Call of Duty fans are some of the most, like, passionate fans and the most engaged fans across all platforms. The fact that we're not offering some sort of premium product for them to pay $5 monthly subscription, $10 monthly subscription, or something pay-per-view is, I think, a missed opportunity. I think there are a lot of people that would be willing to pay for that. I will say, I think there should always be a free option for Call of Duty. I don't think that's the way that esports should go, but that's just my personal opinion. But I do think that not having some sort of quality produced content for money is a big missed opportunity. There are a lot of like, I say the only money I've spent on Call of Duty in the last few years was I used to watch Benjay's co-streams on Twitch, and I hated because he always ran ads during the very ends of the games because he would forget to run the ads. So the only money I've ever spent on COD was $5 so that I could sub to him so he'd stop running ads during the end of the games. And I was happy to pay $5 for that, and I could have watched the regular broadcast and not seen those ads, and I'd still rather do that because I think it's funnier. I think he's funnier. And so whatever. So I think like things like that, there are a lot of opportunities. So I also mentioned my wife is like rides horses, and like they do something similar where like it's the first couple hours of the broadcast are free, and then you can move over to the paid subscription or like the paid plan. Poker does the same thing. You think about MLB TV, like you want to watch your home team, that's on basic cable. But if you want to watch your favorite team as they like in other places, pay $20 a month or whatever. I don't know how much. I think it's way more than that. But yeah, there's just lots of those types of models I think that could be useful here. I'll start with Ryan. Why don't you go first this time and tell me what I'm wrong about?
Yeah, point one, we've hammered home a bunch, right? Qualifiers are not great. Let's do something about it. I do like the idea of keeping online matches a thing, and the online matches lead to majors, and the majors lead to champs. But why not just have a weekend? Yeah, it's hosted by Minnesota Rocker. It's an online event, but they can still like promote their own things, and it's a tournament style setting. I think figuring out like how the seeding for those works would be interesting in group play, if you want to have a group play element to that. But yeah, tournaments are fun. Like my favorite thing in the world pretty much is March Madness every year. Like, it is, to me, by far the best, like, playoff structure of anything. And I just like watching college basketball. So it's, like, the best thing ever. Like, tournaments are fun. Like, seeing how it plays out is fun. Like, watching one random qualifier match throughout the year, it doesn't mean much. Like, it's 10 CDL points, and it's one win in the win column for the major in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So yeah, I like that idea of just every weekend we're playing online, it's a tournament of some sort. And the teams can be creative with how they run it. I like that as well. And the bottom thing is like the freemium viewing model. That is not something I've thought of, but it makes a ton of sense. Every league has something like this, as far as I know. You can get NFL Plus or NFL Sunday Ticket or MLB TV or name the league. They have something like this, so you can watch literally any game you want. The interesting thing with those is that those leagues have a lot of games, whereas COD is less. But if we implement some of these changes where we're playing a lot more COD, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'd be interested to see like what that premium sort of viewing experience includes. Can I switch POVs whenever I want? So if I want to watch Standee or Attach, like I could just switch to their POV. Maybe like stat tracking is live and I can see how each player is doing in the moment, stuff like that. So yeah, that would be cool. That's really not something I've thought of, but I think could work well. And it wouldn't have to be that much. Like if they charge, yeah, $5 a month, $10 a month to have that sort of product out there. Like, I think any diehard COD fan would want that and would see it as being worth it. I think there would be some backlash maybe if we want to watch actual, like, good broadcast coverage, we have to pay money for it. There'll be those types of people. But as long as you keep the free option there, I think that will be fine. Yeah, good points.
240p only for the non-paid users.
Yeah, really make them work for it. Yeah. Robert, what do you think about these?
Yeah, we were talking about the freemium models. So I'll just touch on that quickly. Spoiler alert, obviously, we made this PowerPoint presentation beforehand, and I saw this bullet point, and I was like, oh, it's an interesting idea. I'm like, oh, how could they? But I'm like, the other ones, they have their own, the leagues, they have their own infrastructure for selling this. How could Call of Duty League do it? And I realized the perfect way to do it, with the Call of Duty Battle Pass. They could, if you subscribe to the Call of Duty League, if you subscribe to the Call of Duty Battle Pass, you get free access, you get access to the freemium model. That's actually... Yeah,
love
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. But the thing is, it is questionable as to the thing is the reason that exists for the NFL and MLB is it's like they know they have a big enough fan base that they know they can generate money from that. I don't think the Call of Duty League knows if they have that yet, and they would be at this point the only esport that is charging for that. But it's interesting they could do something with that, probably with some sort of viewing angles or something like that. The interesting thing is, I agree with most of these points. I really like the idea of the letting the players stream. I think one of the things that's lost in the NFL is the fact that there is just the broadcast, right? You're watching Thursday Night Football, here's the broadcast, that's it. And I will say that there are some NFL commentators that I do not like. And not all of them. There are some that I love. There are some that I'm like, oh man, this is a game with those guys, great. And there are others that I do not like, and I'm like, oh god. There was one time I was on an international flight, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna put the game on this flight, and then all this, and I'm like, okay, this is great, because it was an international flight, so I had to make sure that I was gonna be awake at a certain time. So okay, I'll turn on the game, I'll watch it, I'll stay awake, and then that'll fix my entire internal clock. And then I turned it on, and I heard the commentary. I was like, oh, that's right, it's them. Oh, no. But like, this is the thing, right? I think the NFL is just a side point, but like, how cool would it be if when you look at the Manning cast, that's like literally their first foray into that. And like, they should have that for every game. People, like, I remember last year there was a game between the Falcons and the Panthers. There was like no one in the stands. Also, it was raining, but there was still like no one in the stands, right? You would not want to watch that game. But put Matt Ryan on there. People would want to watch Matt. This is the thing. There are ways you can make even unappealing games feel appealing, right? And I think that's something even the NFL could look at too. And that's with the kind of co-streaming stuff. No, I do agree with that. I do think the whole idea of having a team host an online tournament, it gets a little iffy, because there would be some quality issues where some teams would have a really high quality product and other teams might have a lower quality one. So I think there is some issues in terms of that. But other than that, no, I think that the whole point of the fact that right now you're 30 operating weeks before champs, even, I think that is a big problem, right? And I hadn't really thought about the cost that goes into it in terms of, oh, okay, we have to get everybody to the studio, and you're paying all these people for every single day. You're still paying these people for a day, even if it's just two matches versus the three that would normally be on a Friday, right? But you did that because you felt you needed to expand the schedule because you got rid of one of the majors because no one else would host the major, right? So these are the issues where it's like, you're doing this, but you're doing it because it's like it's the least worst option, but if you just designed this system better, there would have been a better option that would have been more economical, right? And I think that at the end of the day is that's really the point here. It gets back to the point I made earlier too, of right, following the footsteps of other leagues. How did other leagues get profitable? They got profitable by basically doing the things that made them more money. For Major League Baseball, that was having 162 games. 81 games at home, right? 81 games away. So you have 81 games where everybody comes in the stands, everybody buys a hot dog, etc., right? That's how they made money. The Call of Duty League needs to figure out how to do that. How do they make money? And I think that's where they're struggling. And it's going to take a bit to look at expenses and figure out where are we making the money, and let's just do that thing more, right? And I think, and the other thing is, I think to some extent you have to figure out a way to make in-person events profitable. You can't, the whole point of Call of Duty and spectator sports is that it's supposed to be profitable to host these things. If it's not profitable to host events in the host cities, then maybe the host cities need to move, or you need to figure out some way to make this profitable. Because if not, I don't really see a long-term future for your sport, right? If you look at League of Legends, right? League of Legends, actually, this week, they have their mid-season tournament in China. They're in front of an auditorium of thousands of people. Last year, Worlds was in Korea. Same thing. Massive. Thousands. I mean, actually, just a month ago for the Korean final, there was thousands of people. They crammed 5,000 people in an arena for that. You don't get that for Call of Duty. You're looking at like a convention center, maybe 1,000 fans or so, and then there's holes in the crowd. You need to figure out a way to make that profitable. And until that is profitable, it's really hard to see a kind of long-term future for the league. So anyways, okay. I think we're good for all that. Did you have anything else you would like to add, Doug, or is that it?
No, I think this is good. I think it's good to not only to get these ideas out. I'm very critical of people who, are casting stones, but they're not producing their own ideas. But I think it's also valuable for us to be able to do it live with each other and talk about it some, because things I'm not thinking about, things you're not thinking about, and so I think it's cool to have both of those angles here. But I think we've had a lot of interesting points here that I think, and as I said with my points, but they apply to yours too, that like the league can take or leave any of these, and adding any of it would be good. They could take one thing and that would be good. So very happy.
Anything else, CDL Metrics?
No, I think we're good. Let's talk about this weekend.
All right. News of the week. The bracket. Here you go. Here's your bracket. And the bracket is basically exactly what we thought it was. The top four teams would have been the top four teams this entire time. They are still the top four teams. And then, there's your bracket. Now, that being said, though, these are actually pretty good. We're going to talk about the lines in a second. The lines for at least the first round are a little bit boring, but this is exciting. There's a lot of different storylines here. Subliners were looking down, came back up a bit, came back down, losing 3-1 to Ultra, but those were very close. They could have won that hard point. They could have also won that control. That could have been a 3-0 Subliners if things had broken just a little bit differently. Ultra, not where they were at the beginning of the year. Dipped there for a bit, maybe trending a little bit up phase. Didn't start the year out strong, but have returned to seemingly Cold War dominance. Optic, they crushed Thieves, but can they still compete with Ultra or FaZe? We'll see soon. And then these guys, I don't know. Moving on to actual wins versus expected wins. Yeah, pretty good, I'd say. You did pretty good. You were lower on FaZe, though. I think that was expectant value because they did 3-0 Ultra. They probably shouldn't have done that, so although the 5.4 is a tad low, it just happened that way because of just the math. You expect them to have a chance in all seven games, obviously, but it's just like the math just had them like collectively losing about a game and a half there, right? And then the rest of these teams just very up and down. Legion just massively underperformed, and I don't know.
Yeah, a couple things I just want to highlight quick from this. Yeah, so Atlanta FaZe I did have as the third highest expected win total going into this qualifier split. And you're right, like I have them favored in every game, but they had to go through, I think, Toronto, Optic, and New York in this split, which is a tough draw. And they passed with flying colors, obviously. They won all seven games that they played. A couple others that stick out. New York, obviously, didn't really see that slump hitting them halfway through this qualifier stage, but it did. They still got 3 wins, which is safely in the winner's bracket, sadly. That's just where we are in the league now. So they have an interesting 4-5 match that we'll touch on in a couple minutes here, but yeah, I'd say everything else pretty expected. LA Thieves above expectations there. Seattle exceeded expectations with that new roster that they have. But yeah, I'd say of all the majors that I've done so far, this is closest to what I had predicted. But it's still, it shows that there's a team or two every stage that does surprise. I don't know if you guys have any other additional thoughts on how these teams overperformed or underperformed, but yeah, go at it.
Did you Did your model consider Shawnee coming in for those games? Was that part of your pre-major?
Yeah, the Boston thing is crazy because it's, and I know you tweeted out something the other day of Boston are, they've won this many rounds of Search and Destroy. And if they just randomly, if you randomly assigned those rounds one over the course of the however many search games they played, odds are they win one of those matches or I don't know, it was something crazy. Yeah, yeah. Or two.
Yeah, two. And they won two none. Out of eight or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So they clearly just had some bad luck. And yeah, you never see a coach having to come in and compete with the team, but it does happen. So yeah, there's things that are impossible to account for, but. Yeah, also an important note to, yeah, seven games is a small sample, and some of these teams get lucky and some of these teams get very unlucky. So the swings in those show up here very clearly, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I think if you look back at it, Boston was probably expected to win two of those seven games and they just didn't. I think if you look at it, they probably should have beaten Optic and they just didn't. They probably should have beaten, I don't know, Minnesota didn't, maybe even Legion as well didn't, right? So there's a lot of games that they probably should have won that they just didn't, right? And I really, here's the thing, if you're Boston, and this is, again ties into the whole multiple games in a weekend thing, you put Shawnee in as a substitute for Beans, you almost beat the third, fourth best team in the league, then you also almost win, you almost beat, who they play? They played someone else. Oh, Thieves. No, they lost 3-1 to Thieves. Then you put Beans back in and then you lose, right? Like, what? How are you supposed to assess that and be like, oh, okay, this is the right decision, or this is, it's so hard to see that, right? Like, I feel, you'd be like, let's put, you have, the thing is, when you look at the structure of the league, the four top teams are clustered between FaZe at the top, and then the fourth best team has 210 points. From 5 through to 11, there is a 20-point difference. So basically, if anybody even remotely overperforms expectations this major, they are now the fifth best team. Right? That's literally where we're at right now, where all of a sudden, if you mildly overperform expectations, you're now the fifth best team in ahead leading in the race for champs. Now, will any of these teams do that? Probably not. But that's the point, right? It's just, it's that close where if someone just even overperforms remotely, if one of these teams make it to Sunday, they're probably going to champs. That's literally the level here, but they're probably not even going to do that, right? It's so crazy how imbalanced this year is, but even with all that imbalance, Boston is still has half of the next team ahead of it, right? There's still another 50 points or 5 full wins. Boston is functionally eliminated, not fully eliminated yet, but it doesn't look good for them. What are you supposed to do? Your owner, your team owner is Robert Kraft. This is ridiculous. Fire everybody. The thing is, it's too late now, but like, I would just keep putting Shawnee in. They're clearly not going to renew him as coach. Just put him in there. What are you doing here? I don't understand. It's just Boston is such a weird team this year, and it's just... I don't know how they fix this, but it's probably too late. But I don't know. Moving on, being the market and combined model results for last week. So last week was a bit rough for us. LEG randomly got 3-0'd by Miami, but Miami does that sometimes. Also, Surge, I think they came very close to winning map 4 against LA Thieves. They just didn't. Obviously, Carolina took care of Minnesota pretty easily. Ultra versus Boston, yep, that was a pretty easy one. I like that one as well. Map 1, minus 22.5 versus Subliners. Yeah, I wanted to stay away from that one. I did. And then, weirdly enough, Seattle covered that spread against FaZe. I think they won map 2, right? Yeah. I was shocked by it, too. I remember I saw them crush the map 1. And I'm like, okay, good. And I think I went to have supper. And then I came back, and all of a sudden, Surge was up 5-4. I'm like, what is happening? What just happened? I don't understand. But, yeah, they somehow didn't cover that minus 1.5 spread. So... FaZe may be a bit of a problem in the search, but maybe Seattle's pretty good at search too. Combined model plays, again, we said, we keep stepping on that rake, we're going to keep stepping on it, we finally worked this time. Because Vegas's line, their advanced metrics looked a lot better than their record kept saying, and finally it carried through. And then also FaZe, we got a little bit of value on that, minus 1400 money line, and then obviously we love Texas there against Thieves as well. Race to 1580, it's actually, you do have the lead there by about 100 points, but it's basically just FaZe and Optic that are carrying you, and both of us, like, these are basically equal. They're literally equal. It's literally, like, these teams are just the same. The entire draft may have been decided by the first and I guess, fourth pick. Yeah.
One other thing I want to bring up with the race here is just, I think three of the four teams in loser's bracket this weekend are my teams. I think Boston, Vegas, Minnesota are all starting loser's bracket. So this is a good weekend for you to possibly catch up. But again, the issue is like FaZe are gigantic favorites. We'll touch on that toward the end of the show. But yeah, I think you can definitely make up some ground. And yeah, still a lot of COD to be played here. So we'll see how this shakes out.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, match previews, odds via Bet365. First up, 5 versus 4, Subliners versus Thieves. Subliners minus 275 on the money line, minus 1.5, minus 110. 15.5 point favorites in the hard point, 1.5 round favorites in the search, but that is shaded to the plus 100. And 1.5 round favorites in the control, but that's also shaded to plus 100. Here you go. I like Subliners. You apparently like Thieves, or at least market. You like Thieves to market. I really like the Subliners minus 1.5, but you don't. I think we'll pass it off to CDL Metrics first. What are your thoughts on this one? Are you going with Thieves here, or is this one kind of a stay away? And then we'll obviously go to Doug after that.
Yeah, it's mostly a stay away for me. I do see a sliver of value on Thieves in the search and destroy, but it's not much at all. So yeah, if you're gonna make me pick a side, I'll take Thieves. They are the 4 seed in this matchup. That is worth knowing. They had a better split than New York by 2 games. Thieves are playing well right now. New York are still obviously a great team. I do think New York should be the favorites. I just think it's a touch too high just based on what we've seen recently. That just leads me to LA Thieves, but I am not a huge fan of it, but it is the side I'd prefer.
Doug, what do you feel about this one?
It's interesting. This is definitely the game that I'm the farthest away from where the market is. I think I personally think I think 100T is better than New York. I think that I don't think there's a big four. I've been on the big three train for 2 weeks now. I don't think that New York has been as good. I think their underlying numbers aren't as impressive to me. I'd pulled up before this just because I think it's interesting. I think the place that 100T edges New York for me is in hardpoint. I don't think New York's hardpoint has looked very good at all. Obviously, they had a close game against Toronto, which I think Toronto's hardpoint is really good. But looking back at their stage so far, they're 5-3 in games that were decided by less than 60 points, but 1-4 in games decided by more than 60 points. They lost to Carolina, lost to Seattle twice, lost to Atlanta, lost to Toronto twice, beat Minnesota by 8, beat Minnesota by 25. So they beat Minnesota by a combined 33 points over 2 games. I don't know. I'm just not impressed. My model is my spread-based model is like fairly strongly weighted towards like more recent results, and I don't include anything past a team's 26th game and beyond, so it's much more recent. I found a lot more success that way, and yeah, I don't know, I'm just not that impressed by New York's recent hard point. And yeah, I don't know, I also find very little predictive value in games decided by less than 50 points, and yeah, New York has been the beneficiary of some good draws that way, despite the Toronto loss by 6 points the other day. So yeah, I don't know, I'm very high on 100T, so I think I picked one of my picks is a 100T pick. But yeah, I like 100T. I like 100T map 1 to cover the spread. I think, I don't know, I like 100T in this series a little bit. I only think they're, I have them right basically at 50-50 in this game. I don't think they're like huge favorites to win or anything, but I do think they're slightly better.
Fair. Yeah, it could be, like, I think of the ones, this one, and I think there's basically 2 that could be competitive on Thursday. I think that's one of the ones that could be competitive on Thursday. Second game on Thursday, Miami versus FaZe. FaZe, ridiculous, minus 5,000 on the money line. Minus 175 for the minus 2.5. So basically they're saying, like, there's like a 30% chance Miami wins a map. Something like that. 50.5 point favorites in map 1. That actually seems a tad low. 2.5 point favorites in the search, minus 110 on that. And then no spread for the control because the money line in the control is minus 2,000. Fun. So I think the question here becomes, does Miami win a map? Does Miami win a map? They have yet to win a map on land. They are, what, 0-12? Or 0-9, I can't remember. On land. 0-9, right? Because they're only in winner's bracket the one time. So they have yet to win a map on land, and at least on Thursday, not looking too good for them to win a map. Yeah, I think FaZe is going to win this. What do we think for this? Do we think FaZe has a chance? Like, do we think Miami has a chance to win a map or not? What do we think?
I do think they have a chance, but I don't know. My model says there's some value on Miami map one, and I just disagree with that. Just look at the way FaZe are playing lately, and it's, yeah, they're unstoppable at this point. Maybe Miami surprise us and win a map, but at the end of the day, this is a FaZe win pretty easily. I'm more interested to see like how FaZe look in round two and round three as they get stiffer competition. But yeah, I don't know. I just got to stay away from this just because the prices are astronomical on the FaZe side. I don't know. Doug, do you have any other thoughts on this brutal matchup?
No, I as I said at the beginning, I think, I don't know. I don't think we need to get into the debate now of if this FaZe team is like, at least in its very current form, like the most dominant single point in time team that we've had in the CDL era. I tend to think that they are, at least it feels that way when we watch the games, but yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing Miami winning a game here. I mean, I agree that I'm a very much an S&D is fairly random proponent, and so I don't know. Yeah, anybody can win an S&D. Seattle can beat Atlanta in an S&D sometimes, so that's obviously where I think they could win, but I don't see any value here, and I'm certainly not picking pennies up in front of a steamroller on Atlanta minus 5,000. So yeah, I think I'll be keeping my cash for this one.
That's fair. I think that spread in map one does look a little soft, though. Only 50.5. That seems a little soft. I think that's the one way. That's the one thing in this map you might want to play. Game three, Ultra, another giant favorite, a minus 1,200 on the money line, minus 2.5, plus 120. Another 50.5 point favorite in map one, 1.5 round favorite in map two. But that's shaded to plus 120, and off the board for control because they know that Seattle is not particularly good at control, but they're minus 1,000 there. Yeah, I'm pretty much to market on this. I kind of like Seattle plus 2.5. We all agree, pretty steep price to pay. Toronto, map 2, they seem to be really struggling there to pay. Map 1 and map 3, they're solid. I would not worry about that. Now, betting minus 163 that Seattle wins Search and Destroy, right? And would you rather get Toronto to win Search and Destroy at plus 120, or would you rather Seattle win Search and Destroy? Would you rather get, and I think I'd rather have Toronto minus 63 again. But no, this is the thing, right? It's a hard call to do it. I probably won't touch it unless I see some better at minus 163.
Yeah, to me, it's more map-to-map plays than the overall spread of the game. My model says maybe some value Toronto map 1. I would not play it at minus 700. I would play it on the spread if you want to. They're one of the few teams that I'm okay laying 50 points on. But just considering that, like, this new look Seattle Surge has a much improved hardpoint compared to where they were, that just leads me to a stay away. Map 2, I think, is definitely playable, though, on the Seattle Surge side. My numbers show and your numbers show that we think Seattle is slightly better in Search and Destroy. If not, it's basically a 50-50, so if you're getting more than even money, in this case you're getting plus 110 on Seattle, it's fair. Like, that's a good play to make, I think. Interested to see if those odds shift at all, but yeah, control Seattle has basically no chance unless the vetoes go really weird. So yeah, it to me feels like a Toronto win. I don't think that's a surprise for anyone, but like, this Seattle Surge team is looking okay. Last week wasn't great for them, losing to Thieves and FaZe, but like, they've shown some good in them, I'd say, during this qualifier stage. The issue now, I think, is like, anytime a team does that where they didn't look so good and now they're showing some promise, is, right, map vetoes catch up to you at some point. If this new look Seattle Surge is looking good on one hardpoint map or one search map, Now these teams know that they can veto it if they want. That's the tricky thing with Surge, is you're going to have to show something on other maps now. And I don't know if they have that in them. Yeah, to me, it's Seattle, just play them to win map two, if anything. But yeah, at the end of the day, I do really think this is a Toronto win, probably a 3-1.
It's a plus 110. Yeah. So basically, you could just say the plus 110 is the Surge +2.5, because that's their only shot. Really.
Exactly.
And plus 110 is much better than -163. Doug, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, the obvious weakness for Toronto, I do Seattle in the Surge in general. I think Seattle could cover that spread in Hardpoint, the point spread in Hardpoint. I think that's, I don't know, yeah, 50 seems like a lot. Considering what Atlanta is against Miami, I don't see this as a, yeah, I don't see Toronto, Seattle, and Hardpoint, especially with how Seattle's looked in Hardpoint just in their last two games. Like, comparing that to, like, Atlanta versus Miami, I don't know, I don't even see those kind of in the same ballpark. So, I don't know, that seems a bit high to me. Just when you heard, I hadn't looked into that before this, but when you said that, I was like, whoa, 50, or what is it, 50 and a half? Like, that seemed a bit high to me, but that was my only, I don't think I would bet that, but, like, that definitely caught me off guard. But, yeah, I think the Surge is the obvious soft spot here.
Mm-hmm. All right, last match of Thursday. Many more matches to come this weekend. Carolina versus Optic. Optic -1200 on the money line, so similar pricing to Toronto versus Seattle. -2.5, +125. 52.5-point favorites in the hard point, so an even bigger favorite than Toronto versus Surge. -1.5-round favorite in the Search, -110. And then -1.5-round favorite in the Control, -163. I generally agree, but I Carolina in multiple pieces here. I have some value on the Carolina +2.5. Don't like Texas -2.5. I like Carolina map 1. I like them a little map 3. I think if there was one to bet this week, if there's one dog to bet this week, I think it would be, obviously you could bet Thieves, that's fine. But I think of the three that are the -2.5 spreads, I think the Carolina one is the far superior one to take a crack at, I think. I think Carolina might have a shot. That 52.5-point favorite in the hard point, Optic, comes out notoriously slow sometimes. Maybe. I think it's just a little too much there on Optic. A little too much Optic is back, and not enough maybe Optic can't cover 52.5 in map 1. I think I see the hard point as a soft spot, and potentially the Control, right? We're looking at that spread +1.5, +120. What if that's Invasion? You're telling me you're getting me +120 on an Invasion Control to go to a round 5? Again, this is the thing. If you're looking at teams that are even remotely caught, Surge took FaZe to a map 5, to a round 5 on Invasion Control. That people thought that was impossible. You're telling me that the difference between Surge and FaZe is bigger than the difference between Optic and Ravens? No. I really like the +1.5 Control, and I kind of like the hardpoint spread as well. CDL Metrics, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I tend to lean Royal Ravens to cover these spreads in this match. The one thing I will say about Control, I don't think we're going to get an Invasion, which could hurt the +1.5 rounds thing. To me, Optic are one of the best Invasion teams, and even when they do play it, a lot of times they get it done before round 5. But Carolina aren't that great at Invasion. So just knowing that Carolina, it's probably their worst Control map. They've only played it 5 times on the year. So they don't like to play it. When they have played it, they've been bad. I think we're pretty likely going to get a High-Rise or a Karachi, which is okay, because I think Carolina can compete with Optic on either of those maps. The +1.5 might not be good just banking on Invasion being there, but regardless of that, I think Carolina can compete and force a round 5 on either of the other maps as well. I think I like Ravens, as crazy as that sounds, because Optic are beating pretty much everybody not named Atlanta FaZe at this point in time. But one thing I like to point back to with Carolina is before the Major 3 qualifiers started, we talked about which teams benefit the most with the new map set coming in. And Carolina was far and away the biggest beneficiary of the new Hardpoint map pool and Search map pool. And I just filtered out my numbers to basically just ditch all those old maps that we did play. Terminal Hardpoint, all Skid Row Hardpoint, all of those. And yeah, like Carolina with this current map set looks pretty average. And average is good. Average is good enough to probably win a map off of Optic. That's kind of where I lean right now. It is scary because Optic is very good as of late. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Carolina is very live, unexpectedly live in this matchup. Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. In keeping with the I'm on the opposite side of some of these things. Yeah, I agree with Carolina map 3, and all you need to say is that if Shawnee can beat Optic on Invasion, then anybody can beat Optic on Invasion on once every once in a while. But I like the spread in the hardpoint. I don't know. I see Optic is fairly strong compared to Carolina in the hardpoint here. So yeah, I like the map 3. I would stay away from the map 1 personally. I think Texas is fairly strong. I see them as the closest to FaZe in terms of my rankings. But yeah, I don't know. I think Carolina will have some opportunities here. I think they are live, but yeah, I don't know. It's not the map 1 that I'd be targeting, which I think is interesting. That yeah, you both of you seem to agree that like the map 1, there's potentially some value there. When I saw it, I really didn't think twice about it.
All right. So futures previews. So here are the numbers. Quickly, we'll just go through the numbers to win in the major and to reach the final. FaZe, minus 400 to reach the final. Ultra, minus 110. Optic, minus 110. Subliners, plus 300. Thieves, plus 1,000. Heretics, 28-1. Surge, 40. Carolina, 50. Legion, 80. Minnesota, 100. LAG, 200. And then Boston, 200. I feel like that's a bit disrespectful to LAG. They are definitely a better team than Breach, but apparently they don't view it that way. FaZe, minus 150 to win outright. So just an outright favorite, coming up to a 55% chance favorite to win there. Ultra, 275. Optic, 275. So basically the money, the books are basically saying Optic and Ultra, dead even. We got no, they're basically the same team according to the books. Subliners, plus 1,000 to win. Thieves, 25-1. Heretics, 80-1. Surge, 100-1. Ravens, 15-1. Legion, 200-1. Oh, yeah, 200-1. Rocker, 250-1. 500-1 for LAG, and then another 500-1 for Boston Breach. I don't have numbers for the major, but obviously Metrics does. CDL Metrics likes FaZe, surprisingly. Oh, not unsurprisingly. Basically, market value on those. Wants to ditch Optic and Texas down a bit, and then obviously Subliners a bit lower, Thieves. Basically just everything is just being sucked upwards for FaZe. Also, the thing to note here is that it seems like the math seems like it doesn't add up, but that's because the prices for the top four are juiced. Because of that, even if you just calculate it, their numbers don't add up to 100%, so you're just normalizing it, drops everybody down. So basically, what CDL Metrics is doing is he's basically just pumping up. The fact that FaZe is even higher shows that they're basically a massive favorite and everybody else should just be lower. I see nothing here. Sometimes I bet a future in the CDL, but usually these odds are horrible, so I usually don't touch it, but I see nothing here. CDL Metrics, do you have anything or not?
Yeah, I know it's minus 150. It was minus 125 either earlier today or yesterday, and now it's up to minus 150. Yeah, I think that's right. And I know minus 150 is like not an ideal price to take someone to win a major outright, but how many series in a row have we seen FaZe just like steamroll whoever they've played? It's a lot, whatever that number is. And yes, Toronto, Optic, New York, maybe LA Thieves could come in and upset them, or maybe FaZe fall on their face earlier than we expect. But yeah, to me, it's you're either buying FaZe being like the best CDL team we've ever seen in the CDL era, obviously. And I think I'm of that opinion. Right now, FaZe are destroying everybody. I'm interested to see like how popular a bet it would be if you had who will win Major 3, Atlanta FaZe or the field? And you price the field at plus, if FaZe are minus 150. If you, the field was like plus 130, like which would be a more popular bet? Because I think we are at that point where it's, if it's FaZe, then I don't know who it is. But yeah, I don't know. Not a lot to talk about here. Like Thieves have a sliver of a shot. I don't know, maybe you could talk me into them because they are the 4 seed. They are playing lately. Doug seems to think that they're about a 50-50 shot versus Subliners in that round one. But then it's like the question becomes, can they beat FaZe in round two? Like, maybe you have to beat them again on Sunday if they make it that far. So that's the tricky thing with this. But yeah, I don't know. Not a ton of value to say on any of these.
Yeah. And then odds to reach the major final, again, similar, but it finds that you slightly like Toronto more than Optic, and then you really do not like Subliners. You're just dragging them down to earth, but you're bringing FaZe up even more. So some value on the minus 400, apparently. And also, you've got Carolina there. Carolina is fair price. That's good to know at the, what, like 25 to 1 or whatever to reach. That's apparently a fair price. But Seattle and Miami, no. Yeah, I don't think there's much to talk about here. It's just the same data. I think it's... the thing is, you're basically betting... Functionally, it's which one do you think is going to make it to... Is going to win the winner's bracket finals, functionally. Is it Toronto or Tech or Optic, right? And I think I'd... probably rather Toronto, maybe, but I'm not... If it was, like, Toronto plus 150, I'd be like, sure. Or Toronto... If it was Toronto plus 400, but Toronto's plus 275 to win the major, and Optic is 275 as well. 275 is too short for me. If it was 4 or 5, I'd be like, sure. But 275 is too low, and I'm not taking any of these other teams to make the winner's bracket final at less than plus money, because, yeah, it is a coin flip between Toronto and Texas, but I don't want to bet it at a coin flip. I want to bet it at plus money, right? I want to bet the side that I think is going to win at plus money, not have it as a coin flip, right? Because it could be, I could be wrong, right? If I like one side slightly more and it's plus money, I'll take that, but I'm not taking a coin flip at with a negative vig, right? So that's my take on that. I don't think anyone else particularly disagrees with that.
No, that's about right. Yeah.
Doug?
No, yeah, I think what's a shame to me is that New York and 100T are going to line up on the FaZe side of the bracket. It's a shame because, yeah, I think it limits both of their upside a lot, but it also, like, from the Atlanta side, it makes things a bit more boring because, yeah, you're not going to get that Toronto-Texas versus Atlanta matchup until winners finals, and like that, yeah, I think it makes it a little less interesting, but yeah, I think these numbers seem about right, and I think it's going to be it's just as easy of a path for FaZe as possible. And I do think those things, at least in the simulations that I've done in the past, like, they make a pretty significant difference. Like, I think the easiest to the hardest path to the finals in some of these simulations in, like, past majors, there's been a pretty significant difference in like probable path or whatever. And so I don't know, it's interesting to see Atlanta, it seems, after having a very tough stage, draw a pretty favorable path.
All right, be the market and combined model plays. Here are our picks for this week. I've got FaZe -50.5 versus Miami. I do like that hard point spread. I am picking Subliners against Thieves. I'm going the -1.5, and I'm also going to do the Ultra versus Seattle spread. I think it's a little soft. CDL metrics, you've got FaZe at -400 to reach the final. Yeah, we're squeezing out that last bit of juice from that orange there. FaZe to win the major, -150. Again, that actually is a slightly better bet, but the other one is a bit... -400 is hard to get behind, but that's fine. And then also Carolina +2.5 versus Texas. I like that one as well. Doug is going directly against me, LA Thieves to win. We're going head-to-head on that one. Seattle map 2 versus Toronto. Again, yeah, I did not touch it, but that's... You're calling your shot right there, and... Again, if they are going to lose, it's going to be that one, right? So that's completely fair. That's one of the reasons why I'm scared off the Toronto -2.5. And then also, you're calling your shot. Heretics to win a map. They're going to win their first map on land on Thursday in another country in Toronto. Yeah, it's... I don't know which map it is. Which map do you think it is?
Put it like that... Yeah, no, I'd forgotten that I'd made this. I had the two picks I had knew right away, and yeah, this one I was searching for. I didn't know what something spicy. I didn't know we could do same game parlays or the two on the same team. So I was trying to find something else. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not particularly bullish. As I said, I think the search is the most likely, but I don't know. I'm playing on the early Thursday game. Teams come out a little slow, maybe something happens. I don't know. I think, yeah, I don't know. As with the last time I was on this show, by the time we got to this point, you guys had completely talked me out of all the picks I had on my thing, and I was ready to change them all. I don't feel as confident in that, but I do think it'll be the surge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it probably would be the surge too, because they were pretty weak against Seattle. It's either, and this is the question, right? It's either Seattle was good at surge or FaZe's weakness is surge, right? It's going to be one or the other, and we will find out first thing on Thursday. Combined model plays, again, only for major only for the first week. Miami map 1, FaZe map 2, Seattle map 2, Toronto map 1, and then Carolina across the board. Also, when you're looking at this, if you don't want to spend a ton on a Carolina plus 2.5 at minus 175, sprinkle a little bit the Carolina plus 1.5. They could potentially get that to a game 5 or even win it in 3 potentially, right? Sprinkle a little bit of the plus 1.5. Sometimes you get a much better value on that, I find. So you can get that at plus 1. I'll tell you what the exact number is right now, but it's probably something like plus 150. Let me see. Okay, 333. Plus 333. Yeah, definitely sprinkle a little bit of money on the plus 1.5 there for Carolina there. Next week, so next pod, we are going to be off for a few weeks, I think. Is it 2 weeks? Or no, 1 week. We're off. We're on, obviously, with Major this week, then nothing next week, then we're back for Major 4, which is only, I think, what, 4 weeks for Major 4, or what? I think it's right, 4 weeks. So there's, thankfully, we lose some of the 2-3-3 weeks, thankfully. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks for Major 4 qualifiers, Major 4 itself, and then we're into Champs, and then in the off season, and then we'll probably find out a little bit more about the future of the Call of Duty League, see if they implemented our changes, or just ignored us. We'll see. But anyways, that's it for us for this week. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you later. Enjoy the major, everybody. See ya.